The English Civil Wars, 1639 to 1660. Fighting in January and February of 1644 and the Battle of Nantwich. Now, on July the 4th, 1644, the Parliamentarian forces began bombarding Arundel Castle, which surrenders on January the 6th. On January the 10th, the Royalist commander Byron besieges the town of Nantwich. January the 19th, the Scots, under Leven, Covenanters, march south and join Parliament's army, which was threatening York. On January the 20th, Charles commissions the Earl of Antrim, a royalist, to raise an army of 10,000 soldiers for service in England and 3,000 for service in Scotland. And then that brings us to January the 25th, which is the Battle of Nantwich. Now, it's a little more background to this campaign than in 1643. Of course, you remember that there had been a cessation deal with the Irish Confederates, and this allowed the king to bring several English regiments from Ireland to reinforce his armies. And in November of 1643, several of these regiments were sent to Cheshire, where a new field army was being formed, and that would be commanded by Lord Capel. And then in December, he was replaced by Lord Byron. Now, Byron then launched an offensive from the south with 5,000 men against the Parliamentarians at Cheshire, most of which were quickly captured. The troops recently returned from Ireland behaved with a degree of ruthlessness not previously displayed in the English Civil War. At Bartholomew's Church on December the 26th, the parliamentary garrison surrendered after the royalists set fire against the doors to smoke them out. At least 12 of the prisoners, mostly local militia, were executed, but however, that was with Byron's approval. On December the 27th, Sir William Brereton, parliamentary commander in Cheshire and Lancashire, attempted to concentrate his forces to confront Byron. Well, that's the Second Battle of Middlewich, forcing him to retreat. Nantwich was now the only town in Cheshire still held by parliamentarians, and its garrison numbered 2,000 under Colonel George Booth and was well supplied. Now, Byron besieged the town at the beginning of January the 18th, 1644, and launched an attack but was defeated, suffering 500 casualties. Together with the losses from sickness and desertions, the casualties from earlier fighting in Cheshire, Byron's royalist forces had shrunk to a size of about 3,800 men, but he was committed to the siege of Nantwich. Well, the parliamentarians are going to try to help out here. Sir Thomas Fairfax and his father, Lord Fairfax, had been besieged in Hull in the second half of 1643. As Thomas's cavalry were of little use in a siege, they were ferried across the River Humber to reinforce parliamentary cavalry from the Eastern Association of Counties, commanded by Oliver Cromwell. Together, they'd won several victories, culminating in the Battle of Winsby. In response to Brereton's urgent appeal for reinforcements, the Committee of Both Kingdoms, the parliamentary body with Scottish Covenanter representation, which was responsible for the conduct of war, ordered Thomas Fairfax to proceed to Manchester. On December the 29th, 1643, Thomas set out across the Pennines in harsh winter weather with 1,800 cavalry. On arriving at Manchester, he found the infantry of the parliamentarians' garrison so ragged that he reportedly burst into tears. Nevertheless, Byron set out from Manchester on January the 21st, 1644, to relieve Nantwich. He was accompanied by Brereton, and their force eventually numbered 1,800 cavalry, 500 dragoons, 2,500 infantry, and what is referred to as a few hundred poorly equipped crudgelers. So we would assume these are people that were armed with such things to bash your head in. Now, at the time, Nantwich was little more than a large village, which was astride the River Weaver, which normally was a stream 20 feet wide. The parliamentarians held the Cheshire Road Bridge in town, but the Beam Bridge, half a mile to the north, was open and available to the royalists. Byron's headquarters were at Acton, about 1 mile to the west of Nantwich. His regiments were quartered in a circle around the sheltering where they could in a countryside covered in snow. On January the 24th, Fairfax's forces scattered a small royalist force which attempted to bar the road to Nantwich at Delamere Forest. Byron decided to maintain the siege, but the next day there was a sudden thaw which caused the Weaver River to rise. Byron ordered his infantry and artillery to move to the west bank around Acton, where the ground was drier. The Beam Bridge and a ferry to its north, however, were then swept away by the floodwater, while Byron and his cavalry force of 1,800 were still on the east bank. So he was forced to march 6 miles by means of another bridge at Minshull Vernon to support his infantry at Acton. As Fairfax approached Acton, Colonel Richard Gibson, deputized for Byron's Sergeant Major General, Sir Michael Earnley, who was sick, deployed 4 regiments of infantry, his own and those of Sir Michael Earnley, Colonel Henry Warren, and Sir Robert Byron, the younger brother of Lord Byron, to face Fairfax. Earnley's, Warren's, and Gibson's regiments had recently returned from Ireland. Most of the Royalist artillery was amassed at an Acton churchyard on the left of Gibson's line. Sir Fulk Hunk's locally raised infantry regiment protected the rear against Booth's garrison at Nantwich. Despite the heavy rain and the numerous ditches and hedges which broke up the ground in front of Gibson's position, Fairfax's forces attacked about 2 p.m. Fairfax was informed that Byron was approaching his left rear from the direction of Minshull Vernon, but he deployed only 2 regiments of infantry and his own troop of cavalry to face them, while his main body pushed forward against Gibson. Although Gibson's men repulsed the first Parliamentarian attack, the Parliamentarian cavalry, commanded by Thomas Fairfax's cousin, William Fairfax, outflanked the Royalist right wing and forced it to retreat. In the Royalist center, Warren's Irish regiment broke, and Earnley's own regiment retreated. Behind Gibson's position, Booth led a sortie from Nantwich with 600 musketeers, which overcame Hunk's regiment and reached Acton Courtyard, overrunning the Royalist artillery and wagon park. By 4:30 in the afternoon, only Gibson and Byron's regiments were still fighting on the flanks of Gibson's position. As the Parliamentarians broke through the Royalist center, these 2 regiments were overwhelmed. Many Royalist soldiers defected to the Parliamentarians. The remainder surrendered or fled. About 1,500 were taken prisoners. Many of the officers took refuge in Acton Church and were also taken prisoner after surrendering on terms. Byron retreated to Chester with the Royalist cavalry, which had been unable to break through Fairfax's flanking detachment. The defeat at Nantwich thwarted King Charles's plan to create a field army in the northwest based on regiments returned from Ireland. Parliamentarians mistakenly thought that the Irish regiments were Catholics, whom they loathed and also feared their professionalism. But in fact, the Royalist general, Sir Ralph Hopton, wrote that some Irish units which joined his army in the south of England at about the same time, quote, bold, hardy men, excellently well-officered, but the common men very mutinous and shrewdly infected with the rebellious humor of England, being brought over merely by the virtue and loyalty of their officers and large promises. So the regular troops just came because they thought they were going to make more money and because their officers went. One Royalist officer taken prisoner at Nantwich was Colonel George Monk, in command of Michael Warren's regiment, who later changed sides and played a prominent part in the Commonwealth of England as well as the Restoration. So that's our Battle of Nantwich. And it's going to be, we're not going to have another major battle till mid-March, but let's see what happens, you know, in the battle for towns and villages all over England till the beginning of March. So, 25th of January is the Battle of Nantwich. On the 28th, the Earls of Antrim, which are Royalists, and Montrose, Royalists, sign a formal agreement whereby Montrose will raise Royalist forces in Scotland and declare for the king. Antrim will undertake to raise forces in Ireland and the Western Isles and invade Northwest. February the 2nd, Royalist Commander Newcastle occupies Newcastle hours before the Scottish army appears north of the city. February the 3rd, Scottish forces led by Leven demand the surrender of Newcastle, which is of course rejected, and Leven's men storm the outworks to the northeast. February the 10th, the Parliamentarian cavalry from Hull rout Royalists at Killam and then raid Bridlington. February the 20th, the same group of Parliamentarian cavalry from Hull raid Whitby. February the 22nd, Langharan, Parliamentarian, in conjunction with Swanley's naval squadron, crosses from Milford Haven to attack the Royalist fort at Pill near Pembroke, which surrenders 2 days later. And our last event in February is on the 26th, where Langharan, a Parliamentarian, captures Roche Castle. So they're still, even in this cold weather, they're still maneuvering around and fighting, which, you know, in most major armies in Europe, once you get to the winter, they take winter quarters. Of course, one of the things about winter quarters on the continent is in the spring, you have a lot less troops because people begin to melt away. So next time we'll be getting into March and moving towards the Battle of Cheriton. Now, the sources for this: History of England by Thornton, Lockyer, and Smith, Fairfax by Wilson, Cromwell by Wedgwood, Cavaliers and Roundheads, The English Civil War, 1642-1649 by Hibbert, English Civil War, 1642-1651 by Gaunt, and The English Civil War Atlas and Concise History of the Wars of the Three Kingdoms, 1639-51 by Lipscomb. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com. Ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.